What is going on, everybody? Hopefully you guys are all doing well out there. Just want to send a quick thank you. I'll get back to most of people that have contacted me on emails and DMs and stuff. The feedback I've gotten the last couple of weeks from people has been very entertaining and very informative in a lot of ways. And I think it's good. It's good to sometimes maybe ruffle a few feathers. I think people appreciate sometimes maybe a little too unfiltered truth gets spoken on this podcast and on Twitter and things like that and social media and out there. But I think people are appreciate it to a certain extent, and I certainly have had you might be surprised, I've had a few box breakers that I actually put on blast the last couple of weeks actually email me and contact me directly, basically thanking me for letting them know what they were doing was pretty crazy. Was pretty much a middle finger to anybody out there that wants to run a legitimate business. So, you know, that's the kind of thing we do here. Today we've got my brother not from the National. He's back, so we'll talk to him for his last couple of days at the National. We'll mainly talk a lot about business and a lot about, you know, this food chain of sports cards, where even if you're just a collector, but this is mainly for the sellers. And we've done tons of shows that some are just focused on the cards and guys that collect AJ Green and Andy Dalton like me. And some are on guys that are into selling and don't really collect at all, that are really just in it for making money. So when you have as many, I mean, we haven't had that many shows, but we've had 130 some odd of them. You can mix it up a little bit because it gets a little boring if you just talk about one topic or go one route with these things. So mix it up a little bit. Got some questions actually from, again, I've gotten tons of great feedback this week, so I'll mix in a little bit. I can't mix them all in, but I have two here that I wanted to get to really quickly. So we'll do that. And I got a kind of a wacky business idea. Everybody wants to, you know, be the next group breaker, be the next hobby store, be the next whatever, distributor, be the next blog. I have an idea that I haven't seen anybody really try, or maybe at least to a certain scale. I don't think any of these group breakers or many people in the hobby will be able to pull it off, considering they host on free websites like Vaughn Live TV and these weird shopping cart websites that they can't even host it on their domain. It's always their little name, blah, 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 dot, Mixy, or whatever these little shopping cart websites. I mean, just spend the extra $20 or $100 or whatever they're trying to charge you to get the direct domain. I mean, whatever. Sports card food chain. What am I talking about? Am I talking about food? No, I'm talking about who makes money in this game. And I'll talk, well, Ryan, my brother and I have actually recorded that interview already. We talk about this a little bit, but I want to emphasize it right here in our first segment. First of all, collectors and anybody selling, especially people selling, need to realize where you are on a food chain, whether it's in baseball cards or you're in the shipping business or you're in the electronic fan business or in the microphone business or the sunflower seed business. You need to know where you're at on the food chain. The leagues and the owners are number one. And then you could argue this. I just put this together in 2 minutes. So the food chain might be incomplete or might not be totally in order, but you'll get the idea. Leagues, owners, essentially, rich businessmen that own teams because, for the fun of it most of the time, not because that's what they make their money on. So you see how much money an NFL owner has when he can own a couple hundred million dollar football team and it's not even how he makes his money. And I guarantee you almost all of them are making money in the NFL, especially. NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL, even the NCAA is more corrupt than probably all four of those leagues combined. And they all milk the profits right off the top without having to do anything. And I say not do anything. They can't be locked out and they can't have players. They can have players doing steroids, but it certainly affects their marketability and things like that. So, but you get the idea. Those guys are at the top. There's a reason why those guys have a bunch of money. They get into businesses that are pretty freaking easy, and they make a bunch of money doing it. And so they make a bunch of easy money licensing their team's logos and team's players' faces and stuff like that. It's pretty easy. Second in line, I actually put UPS, FedEx, USPS, because they're literally shipping all the raw materials. They're shipping back and forth to distributors. They're distributing the distributors use UPS to ship to the box breaker or to the card shop. And oftentimes they end up on eBay and stuff like that, and they get shipped again and again and again. So those guys are making a ton of money. And those are big businesses, except for the United States Postal Service, which actually loses money. I don't know. That's mainly due to some bad – I mean, they have some bad health care and stuff like that and pension plans that probably aren't a good idea for companies to really hand out freely like the United States Postal Service did. I still put them in the mix because a lot of people use them, and they might, if you segment out just the cards, they might actually make money on those shipments. Manufacturers, I put number three because I sure as hell know UPS and FedEx make a hell of a lot more money than they do. You can find out every 3 months how much money they probably make more money in a day or two, certainly in a quarter, than all the manufacturers combined do in a whole year. So I put them number three, even though they don't make a whole lot of money. And I include their printing facilities. A lot of these people, we call Panini and Topps and these guys manufacturers. They ain't manufacturing crap. They pay a guy to do it all on Photoshop, and then that gets shipped off to a Vista print place. I mean, obviously a place that specializes in a little bit more. I mean, Vista print is not sophisticated. They have a pretty big business going on. But you get the idea. There's nobody at Topps trying to oil up machines so the baseball cards keep coming out. That's all done somewhere else. It is a totally separate company that probably does wedding invitations and stuff for other companies and flyers and all kinds of other stuff. So I put those guys basically in the same group, considering they both have their operating merchants there. Fourth, eBay and PayPal, and you could actually maybe slip certainly with the amount of money these guys make and the amount of transactions. People say, oh, group breaking has gotten so big. Trust me, if you just take the cards category, you could just take football cards or even hockey cards, maybe even MMA cards, and look at how many transactions happen in an hour. Just 1 hour on eBay, and it probably dwarfs the number of people that bought into a break from every group breaker in the whole industry combined for a whole day. So 1 hour transactions on eBay, especially in prime time, like at 3, 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the afternoon, in 1 hour, more cards sell than everybody buys into every group breaker spots in one day. So it tells you how big eBay and PayPal, and obviously you're using PayPal on forums and all over the place. I don't need to tell you how much money those companies make. Distributors and wholesalers. I don't know how much money these guys make. All, essentially, it's just a warehouse and a computer and some girl sending out an email. Back in the day, these guys used to be an information source. These guys are going to get squeezed out. And I don't know why Panini America and Topps invite these guys to VIP parties and treat them like gold. I'd be looking to squeeze these guys out. Because you better believe a distributor wants whatever margin, 5, 10%, whatever he's trying to make. He's not trying to buy the stuff from Panini and sell it for a loss to a card shop or a group breaker. These guys try to make money. You should squeeze these guys out. Literally, all a distributor is a warehouse you can get for 75 cents a square foot and a computer. That's it. And a UPS account. Trust me. It's not that hard. These guys aren't salesmen anymore. Since with the advent of, the internet. Oh, the internet is where people go for their information. They don't need to call a salesperson anymore. Oh, they can just go to Panini's blog and read all about cards, since they put up like 4 posts a day that are often very entertaining about the card, especially if you're a collector or a dealer. How many dealers out there get information? What does a distributor do? It's just a go-between. Why ship from UPS from Panini's factory or their printing facilities factory to a distributor who then just sends? Why can't Panini do that? Or why can't Panini contract somebody to do that for them? Trust me, these distributors and wholesalers in a low margin business. Does Apple ship their iPhone? If you want to sell iPhones, you think you buy it through a distributor? You think Apple wants to give money to just some guy that's sitting in a 75 cents a square foot warehouse? And it's a hell of a, If that's how much it costs out here in California, I can only imagine what warehouse space costs elsewhere, where most of these distributors are located. It's probably like 10 cents a square foot. Those guys are going to get squeezed out. And if I was lower on this food chain, I'd hope these distributors and wholesalers get squeezed out. It's not that good of a business anyways. Lots of distributors have been getting squeezed out since the recession. You don't need them anymore since the advent of the internet. You don't need a middleman like that anymore. They don't do anything. The seller is below the distributor and wholesaler because typically a distributor and wholesaler is going to have some kind of margin they're trying to get, and they don't necessarily need to drop prices a ton or try to liquidate like a seller might have to, that might have rent and internet bills and other things that are coming up. Not that a distributor doesn't have bills. But the seller, you're all the way down here. You're all the way down at the bottom nearly. So you need to understand that. If you're getting into this business, you're all the way down at the bottom. There's no way you're going to make more than a distributor. There's no way you're going to make more than eBay and PayPal. There's no way you're going to make more than the manufacturers that are making the cards that you're selling. There's no way you're going to make more than UPS that you're probably shipping money to every month. And there sure is a hell of a no way you're going to make more than the NFL and the owners of those teams make in a day, let alone a whole year. So you're way, way down on the food chain. And bottom on the list is the collector. So no wonder when you open up a $150 box, you get $4 worth of hits. Because all these other guys, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 other businesses, many of them are public and answer to shareholders. And don't care, literally, when you're a public company, you don't care about your employees. You don't care about your customers, really. You only care about your shareholders. If your shareholders want you to care about your customers and your employees, then typically that's what happens. But if your shareholders want dividends or want you to just milk the business dry, that's what happens. And we get into that more in our interview. I won't spoil most of it, but we talk about how Madison Dearborn Partners, which is an M&A firm that owns Tops for several years and that probably has been dying to exit from that business probably for a few years now, at least. And I guarantee you they have investors that are pissed, that probably call them on the phone and say, why in the fuck are we still own this stupid baseball card company? Get rid of that piece of crap. The S&P, we could have invested our money in an index fund, which is probably up 16% this year alone. Let alone the last 4 or 5 years, you'd be up 100% probably. Just in some index fund where you pay some manager to type in an algorithm and do some trades for you. You don't even do that. That's all, I mean, trust me. There's investors at Madison Dearborn Partners that are calling these guys up saying, get rid of this stupid company. We could have made a hell of a lot of money buying an S&P 500 fund, which any idiot can do. Be up 100%. Tops has been run into the ground by idiot employees. But you can go to my Twitter stream to find out more about that. Next thing, funny, but I got to give credit to an emailer. I'm not big on giving out names, but I'm trying to give out credit. And the emailer, typically these people listen to the show. If you email me, I can imagine you probably listen to the show or something. And I usually give you a heads up when I follow up with you that, I talked about it on the show. So I want to give that person knows who they are. So thank you for alerting me of this. There's this funny but serious thread on blowout cards where I kind of I chuckled and I had so many range of emotions when I was reading this thread. I'll have a link to it in the show notes of this show. But essentially there's a collector in Canada that's willing to buy redemption codes from Topps, which, you know, could be replaced by a card of inferior value. You could have to wait years. You know, you just never know what's going to happen there. So he's willing to buy them from you. And, you know, typically it slightly below probably going rates and stuff like that. And so I thought that was funny. I thought, you know, hey, this guy's willing to take the risk of getting these codes. Maybe he gets something better for the card. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he gets nothing. He's willing to take the risk. And it provides some liquidity, actually, for some of these collectors. Now, I'm not endorsing this guy or saying he's going to give you your money or whatever. He might be a great guy. He might not be. But I just thought this was a funny thread that somebody sent me, and that collectors – it provides liquidity for these collectors that are holding on to this redemption. They're like, God, I don't want this card. I don't want this – you know, I don't want to have to wait through Topps' BS, or I have to wait on the phone for 45 minutes. Well, pass it off onto this guy that's willing to buy it. So thought that was just kind of funny, kind of interesting. Two questions I got from a collector. Thanks again for contacting me on the email. Wanted to know if I think kid collectors, children collectors, you know, younger collectors will go extinct from this hobby. Well, one idea that I thought, since my brother said there was a lot of older people at the National, well, this might sound kind of predatory, but with my best intentions, I recommend most of those guys have nephews, have grandsons, have nieces, and they probably have multiple grandchildren and multiple nieces and nephews and stuff like that in the family. Bring them to the show. Don't just show up. How many uncles don't want to go to a show and flash money around in front of their grandson or their nephew? You know what I mean? And say, oh, I'm going to buy $1,000. Do that. Bring them there and show them spending money on this stuff is fun. And buying a Mickey Mantle for $1,000 is fun. Or buying a box and opening it up is fun. And getting a wrap of redemption. But none of these guys seem to bring many of them to the show, you know. Or if you're a father, bring your son. I think there's probably more of that going on. But I think it's a lot of it is because the nephew or the grandson doesn't have any interest. So can kids get extinct from collecting? I don't know if extinct is a great word. Is a great word to use for this. I don't know if I would say 100% endangered. I would probably use the word endangered. They're probably endangered now. I think they'll stay endangered only because I think the NFL, the NBA, and those kind of things are so popular. And us as kids, I remember being a kid and looking up to Joe Montana. Like that's the reason why I don't root for the 49ers anymore. You think I grew up in California rooting for the Bengals? You got to be kidding me. But they trade Joe Montana in an era where that didn't happen as often as it certainly does today. And I was devastated. I was devastated. When Magic Johnson announced his retirement, I cried. And it's still to this day one of the biggest moments of my life. When they retired his jersey in Los Angeles, I cried. I was devastated about Magic Johnson. Devastated, and I'm very thankful he's still alive, and even more thankful it looks like he's doing even better after retirement. It's hard to imagine. Magic Johnson's probably doing better now in business than he did it as a basketball career, and he's one of the greatest of all time. That guy is really rich. He's made some very sophisticated business investments in Starbucks and in downtown LA, which is, I could have a whole show on downtown, how different downtown LA is compared to 10 years ago. Holy crap. But anyways, kid collectors go extinct? I would say endangered. To answer the question, I would say endangered. And it would take some creativity and some innovation from the sports card manufacturers to get them more engaged into cards and find value in them. Kids, you know, they got iPads and they got computers and they got sports and they got church and they got other things, school, they got other things going on. So I'm not surprised that they're not too wowed about sports cards. There's a lot of things in this world that are wowing me more than cards these days. That's for sure. Autographs in person and TTM, like a little bit more information about that. Well, I'll have a future show that describes the process and how you could acquire these and maybe cheaper ways. This is what I'll say about those. I'd much rather have an autograph that I saw Kobe Bryant right there in the parking lot, or I saw him before a game, or I saw him at a restaurant. I wouldn't interrupt him at a restaurant, but maybe on the street or in a clothing store or something, or at a TriStar show or at the National. Certainly would love to get an autograph face-to-face because, like, we'll talk about it on today's show. These authenticators, it's just some guy's opinion. If I didn't see Muhammad Ali sign that, you know, it's just some other's opinions that Muhammad Ali signed it. You know, so I strongly suggest getting autographs in person and strongly suggest sending out TTMs. I think TTMs, there are forums and places out there. If you do a little search on Google, I'm sure they pop up really high. Just search for TTM autograph, like database lists and like success lists. There are forums that go into that. So if you're into you know, I wouldn't just blindly send out TTMs if I didn't have an inkling I'd got it back. I would want to try to get a, you know, stamps are not cheap. It's almost a full dollar to send a SACE and an envelope with stamps, let alone the cards inside. So you want to have a success rate. And, you know, if you have money to burn, go ahead and spend, you know, $100 or $200 trying that. I'm not going to tell you how to spend your money. But if you're concerned about having a good return rate, do some research on forum. They're out there. For in-person autographs, my brother goes to a ton of minor league games. I almost think it's written into the contracts of those guys, or it's almost expected. Those guys sign, and you'll find number one picks. You'll find guys that have Bowman Chrome autographs selling for about $100, $200. You go to a minor league game and have them sign 30 things there before the game. They often have almost every team has fan fests and stuff like that. Tickets to those are often given to season ticket holders, but season ticket holders often sell those on eBay or like StubHub, so you can get into those. I know the Kings are legendary, or in my area, the Sacramento Kings basketball team are legendary for having a fan fest where you can come there and you could get, you know, back in the day, people were excited about Chris Webber and Mike Bibby, but you can go and get DeMarcus Cousins on whatever you want. You can go and get their new rookie and stuff like that. And you can get those tickets to those events typically from season ticket holders who sell them on eBay. And typically there's tons of brokers that just off that for whatever money they can get. But we'll come up back with another show. I have some other topics that I've wanted to talk about. You know, we'll get back more into, you know, talking about, we got tons of shows. Like I said, I've been doing this for 5 years, and I'm sure 5 years from now I'll still be recording a podcast. I'm not doing this for the money or for the attention. So I'm sure I'll be here in a couple years just talking to myself. So not to worry, I will get in a future show into more depth about that. Last thing I want to touch on is a wacky, wacky, wacky business idea. You know, with all the things I've said about PayPal and group breaking, how you as a customer, you out there can buy into a group break, get whatever whatever you get in the group break, and reverse the transaction on PayPal and get your money back anytime. Just do it. Don't lie to PayPal either. Tell them exactly what the transaction was for. It was for a group break, where I bought a team. I didn't know what cards I'd end up with. I ended up with these cards. One of them's worth $1,000. One of them worth is $10. Or maybe you ended up with no cards. Tell PayPal whatever happened. And oh, lo and behold, they'll give you your money back. Holy crap. Wow. That's crazy. Well, one way to solve that is actually start your own payment processor. And the one guy I'm going to source on this, I don't know. I know a little bit about the payment processing business, but I know a lot more of it after I heard this guy, Chad Eli. I think it's Chad. I think it's E-L-L-I-E or Chad Ellie. It depends on who pronouncing his last name. But this guy has been on several interviews. If you go to the website pokerfraudalert.com, he had an interview on that several months ago where he talks all about the payment processing business. How he talks about how these guys make millions of dollars and they don't even have an office. The payment processing business, especially when you're processing payments that PayPal doesn't like or that more mainstream payment processors don't like, it's an easy business. You don't even need an office. You need less than a group breaker does. And there's a business you can scale. You could undercut PayPal. You could offer like cash back and rewards to your customers or to the group breakers that are processing payments through you. It's nothing new. There's tons of people starting. There's probably 10 different people started a payment processor today. There's probably more than people that did that today. Can a group breaker do it who can't even set up their own website or stream their own live stream on their own website or on a reputable website that are certainly available out there? No, they're not going to be able to do it. But talk about a business you can scale. That's why PayPal is available 24 hours a day. PayPal, I can log into my account right now and buy something if I wanted to. Can I bind your group break right now? It's 12:30 a.m. my time in California. Can I buy into a group break? Maybe I can buy into a spot, but when's the break going to happen? I don't know. When do I get my cards? Well, I don't know. But if I bought into it, I would have processed through your payment processor and you would have got paid instantly, whether the break happened or not. So there's good businesses out there. It takes innovation. It takes thinking outside the box. And I'm not saying starting a sports card or a group breakers payment processor is a good idea, especially to people that can't even set up their own website and probably know nothing about payment security and payment gateways. Probably not a good idea for them. But if you're halfway intelligent out there, or if you ever worked in the payment processing business, yeah, start a sports card payment processor. Undercut PayPal. Trust me, you're not going to get as big as Visa or PayPal. That's damn near impossible. Ask companies like Square that get venture capital money how hard it is to compete against PayPal and Visa. Good God. Nobody wants to compete against those kind of companies. But can you carve out a small niche, which is sports cards is and group breaking especially is, within an even smaller niche? Oh, heck yeah. And you could probably make a lot of money processing payments. Imagine if you got 1% for every transaction for every group breaker every day for a year or 2 years or 3 years. Imagine how much money that would be. Whew, good God. Be a heck of a lot more easy and a heck of a lot more money than opening the boxes yourself and shipping them. Oh. Now that we're handing out good ideas, we'll take a break. Come back with my brother Ryan, talk about the last day of the National, talk about some business, talk about some other things right after. Skype call right now. Ryan, we're going to talk to you about the last couple days. I know you had the last couple days you were kind of busy shooting video and doing other things. So we'll get into that very quickly. But what I think people might be interested in, maybe haven't heard a whole lot about if you weren't on Twitter and stuff like that, is Topps had like a meet and greet and kind of a question and answer kind of thing, giveaway thing going on. I think it was like a Thursday or Friday night at the National. So if you want to maybe get into that and talk about what kind of things were talked about on that.
Sure. So Topps had what they would describe as a meet and greet with about, I don't know, there might have been 80 people in the room, maybe less, maybe a little more. They gave out free booze beforehand, plenty of snacks, pizza, chicken strip, little things. I mean, you could grab whatever you want. There were only 80 people around. It wasn't like competing with a whole bunch of people. They had a big spread laid out. They had all these boxes they were going to give away, one-on-one little art pieces. So they got up there and just essentially after all the employees, I should mention helpless, as you'll find out, helpless employees who are just kind of a cog in the private equity game. Not the blame, but they brunt the criticism, like they're kind of on the front line just taking bullets for, I think you made a pretty good comment. The guys over at Dearborn and Eisner, Rick was over at that Marion Country Club you were catting at, that's like probably fucking $5 million to become a member. But anyway, so let's get into some of the questions that were answered. I maybe expected a little more fireworks than there were from the collectors talking about issues that Topps had, but there were certainly plenty of questions about, hey, why don't you have an NBA license? Why don't you have an NHL license? It basically comes down to they can't afford it. It's a 20% royalty right off the top. Those sports are obviously not as popular as the MLB. Dearborn and Eisner are smart guys. They know the cash cow is MLB. MLB baseball. It's called baseball cards for a reason. Baseball cards. some people who are so like tuned into this industry and plugged in, they like think football. No, the mass majority, the guy who doesn't, you know, could care less about Twitter, let alone a website, a podcast. He just wants a few cards for his son. He loves the Giants. He wants to pick up some cards. Baseball cards. Crush it. Crush it. So what do? Oh, they really only make baseball cards. Wow, that's a real smart thing to do. A company with the type of brand legacy that Topps has, and they have a tremendous brand legacy, tremendous goodwill in the industry. Basically the first five answers to the questions, whatever questions they were, is, we just don't have the money for that. We just don't. We can't do that. We can't have autograph signers at our booth. That's just too much money. We can't be in all these other sports. It's just too much money. Okay, here's another good one. Like when a redemption expires, you buy a product from like 2005, and then the redemption expires. Why can't you just fulfill those, or why can't you just redeem them? That would explode our inventory. And now we're talking about some kind of, you know, the inventory of these card companies that barely any collector ever thinks about. I mean, the inventory of stickers they have, game used jerseys, cards on hand, this, and this. That's all very expensive. You got to insure it. You got to, you know, protect those, everything, on and down the line, have employees that manage that. Yeah, too expensive. Sorry, we can't deal with you. It's too expensive. Again, while Dearborn and Eisner do these $1 billion deals, it seems like every week, Dearborn's selling some company that's losing money for $1 billion, but they can't offer this baseball card company that they have for 7 years. So anyway, back to the discussion. There was a question about Santa Claus card. Why Topps doesn't make Santa Claus cards? I know everybody's really riveted and want to know the answer to that. Maybe they got to get a license to Santa Claus cards and they're too expensive. That's kind of a joke. But next. So one person said 5% of the world is colorblind. Have you ever thought about changing the colors of your purple and blue refractors and Bowman because it's hard to tell the difference? I can see for those 5% that it is an issue, but you know, the other 95% of collectors who are able to, you know, are not colorblind. Then, so you know, just a question about, I guess, the 5% there. Well, you know, I'll make a joke about the 1% of the, you know, I've been hearing that's a buzzword in kind of the political realm the last few years, and the upper 1%. Well, guess who's in the upper 1%? Let's see, probably right about now, somebody from Dearborn is playing Pebble Beach. So it's probably a great day over there. So somebody over at Dearborn, your you know, America's favorite card company, you know, the pillars of the community, somebody over there from Dearborn is ripping a 3-wood. While, you know, some of the poor guy employees are just taking these bullets while they really can't do anything. I raised the question about customer service. If there was a plan in place, they confirmed that there was some staffing kind of shakeups. What do we know about some staffing shakeups? Some guys left. Some guys might have got fired. Some guys might have done something shady. This, that, and the other thing. And, oh, lo and behold, it takes a little while to get somebody in there who wants to run the customer service for a sports card business. Maybe there's a lot of smart guys over there on the East Coast, and they kind of do a little research on what they're in for, and they kind of like, oh, yeah, wow, this company gets ripped every day for their customer service. Oh, they have all these cases open at the Better Business Bureau. Oh, they took down their Topps Sports Twitter. Oh, I'm over here on Blowout Forums. Wow, look at these threads about Topps customer service. Oh, wow, I'm over here on Freedom Cardboard. Man, look at all these. Wow, never mind, I'm going to go apply at a dog food place or something. Wow, I'd rather do something different. So they definitely had issues there. They acknowledge them. After every kind of tough question, they would give away some really cool items, actually, to be honest. I mean, they were giving away a lot of stuff, and that's for obvious reasons. That's why they give away stuff on Twitter, because if they didn't give away anything on Twitter, they'd be probably be getting blasted mercifully. But, you know, but the fact that they do give away thousands of dollars worth of stuff every month, it does keep a lot of heat off them. It keeps kind of the attention on that stuff. Most people in this industry can't like step back from it. They're, you know, we're able to step back from it and look at it just from a pure business perspective. No emotional attachment to the cards or the company or a box we opened 10 years ago or our big personal collection. We're able to literally just like I'm looking at United Online and looking at their flower business and looking at their pilot business, which, believe it or not, still makes a ton of money, you know, all this kind of stuff. So we're able to kind of step back from this, look at it from a pure business perspective, and kind of call bullshit on some of this stuff. That it's just a company that literally has to pay 20% right off the top to the MLB. They didn't say that during the meeting. I mean, obviously they're not going to say that. That's kind of some inside numbers that you really shouldn't, they really shouldn't be out there. The MLB probably wouldn't want those numbers out there, but oh, guess what? I don't really care. I found those out from somebody extremely, extremely reliable. So
The average collector listening to this might not really care what the numbers are or whatever. They're just cared about getting their card and stuff. But in a sense, they kind of have to care a little bit, or kind of have to be knowledgeable, especially recently, about that kind of stuff, because maybe your expectations and you need to be lowered, or you need to think about your decisions in the hobby. But certainly people that want to make money in this hobby, and certainly there was plenty of dealers at the National, and there was probably lots of them that weren't there. There was plenty of them that stayed at home or stayed in their card shop or stayed doing what they're doing online or whatever, selling cards or boxes or memorabilia or whatever. Really, those people are who we're speaking to maybe the last several shows, is that, you know, you really do, if you're relying on, you're literally last in the food chain, if you think about it, in terms of the person that can make a profit on cards. So you need to be aware of, hey, if Topps is having trouble making a profit, if Panini's having trouble making a profit, and if Upper Deck's having trouble making a profit, and any of these other places are, then how many business models out there do you know of, Ryan, that the manufacturer doesn't make very much money, but the people selling the products make a ton of money? It just seems it's very backwards.
It's not going to happen. Don't... Oh man, yeah, you make a great point. That the guys who are manufacturing, and we'll run down every company. Like we're just starting with Topps. We're going to go through all the manufacturers, but then we'll also, just a preview, we'll dive into some actually guys who are hustling and guys who do have a successful thing going. Very sometimes, in some cases, extremely successful. But. Those guys are doing something a lot different than licensing from the biggest pro sports teams, pro sports organizations in the country to make baseball cards and make boxes. Like, wow, that is probably the worst business in this industry, because you have to spend, I mean, the barrier to entry is about $250 million, let alone what Topps and Panini spend every year. But at least Topps makes money, and they have a crap ton of money sitting in the bank. Like, Topps isn't going to go broke. Topps isn't going to be in bankruptcy. No, not at all. They're probably actually still a profitable company. Because guess what? They lean it down. Those guys at Dearborn know exactly what they are doing. In one sense, I'm sitting back kind of ripping them for what they're, you know, ripping the company and customer service and the product and this, this, and this. But Dearborn is running it like a perfect business, exactly like they should.
Well, they're like an M&A. I mean, if it was privately owned, I would argue that it's not being run like a perfect business, because they probably should care more about their customers than their long-term success. But an M&A firm doesn't give a crap about really what people think about their businesses. They only buy them to exit from them, whether it be they wind them down or they sell them, or they merge it with another company or whatever. They're not like I can't believe they've held on to Topps for 7 years. I'm sure that wasn't in the plans when they bought it. They didn't buy it thinking they were going to have it 7 years later, I don't think. So it just shows you how difficult of a business it is, and why you almost need to have the rich man's Dearborn Partners mentality, that you're just going to milk it dry. You're just going to hire new, young, fresh-faced employees just to replace the old ones that don't do a very good job themselves. And just keep the cycle going. Produce as few cards as possible and put as much money in your pocket. So, like Ryan said, so they can go to Pebble Beach and play golf. So those guys can fly in their private jets. There's no employees flying in no private jet at Topps or any of these companies, but the guys at Topps they probably fly in a private jet more than they drive in a car. So you tell me who's running a real good business right now. I mean, it doesn't take much common sense.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like and that's the thing, is that you, as a collector, you do have to be, I think as a collector, if you're just buying single cards or you're buying what you enjoy, it really doesn't matter, because guess what? Topps isn't going to go anywhere. They're still going to make cards of the goodwill value that come. And just Topps, I'm not talking about Panini Upper Deck, we haven't even got there yet. Like, you know, don't be surprised if the major things happen with them in the next few years. But Topps, is, to me, is not really like Coca-Cola, but you can akin it to Coca-Cola. They're going to make Coca-Cola till pretty much the end of time. I mean, baseball cards, yes, you know, it's a dicey business, but it is profitable. But the only way to make it profitable is if you shave all your customer service and redemptions, and you really do have to blow off your customers in a sense. And essentially, these employees were admitting to all this. That, oh, yeah, we, you know, it's tough. Like, it's tough, that, you know, in terms of staffing and the number of people you need. They got to make money for they got to hit the numbers for Dearborn so they can go play at Pebble. That's what it's about. It's not making a blogger happy or somebody who has one redemption card happy. At the overall business, and they know that. They know they're in a screwed position. But they can't squander it. They can't squander this business. It means too much. It's a paycheck for them. It's a job for them. There's not that many employees over there. We obviously know there's not that many customer service representatives, and those are the cheapest ones. The Topps, they let go of their this is how they're trying, unless they're trying to save money. Their CEO kind of stepped down. He got a board position, so now he's probably getting paid more and has more equity, and now he doesn't have to work. Talk about a smart guy. So he steps down. I mean, he was probably making a ton of money a year. I mean, a lot, maybe seven figures. Guess what? They haven't replaced him. That's a big chunk of change for a CEO of a company you probably don't even want. Go to Madison Dearborn's website. I think there's even a part on their website where they talk about how long they like to have companies. I think it's like 3 to 7 years or 3 to 10 years. You're exactly right. They're probably getting to the point now where they definitely don't want to have it past 10 years, which would be 2017. Maybe that's why they extended the MLB license so long. Well, obviously that's the cash cow, so that's why they wanted to
do that. Well, that's worth money on the open market. That's a tangible asset.
Well, Topps is the only card company that's worth something, because A, they have a ton of cash in the bank, and it would be, and I would be just fall if the numbers come out when this company gets sold or whatever happens, and they squandered the I think it was $186 million or something that they had in the bank in 2007, just cash sitting in the bank that they didn't need for operating, that they didn't need for anything. They didn't need that for anything. It was just literal cash in the bank that they got $2 million a year interest on. And they did, you know, little short-term investments and stuff that they literally just made money on, this little $86 million pool, kind of like how a school has a, God dang it, what do they call it? Damn it, I can't remember what. A fund, some kind of fund that every, like, major university or private school has these big, like, mass billions, in some cases billions and billions of dollars of just literal, like, almost liquid cash. Of course, they have it invested in all this other stuff and not just getting a boring interest rate, but it's just Topps has just a bunch of, and that's what makes what makes the company extremely valuable. Because when you buy it, you get the keys to $86 million in cash. Oh, it's like buying something, you know, buy one get one half off, or buy one get money back. That's what you would do if you bought Topps. That's why Dearborn bought it and then bought it back in the day, because they saw, ooh boy, $86 million in cash. That's going to look good in 10 years. And we'll, you know, fluff that a little more. Ooh, and we could run this business way more lean. We could cut out ETOPS and the pit.
Basketball.
And cut out all the stupid license, basketball, NHL. Ooh, boy, they don't make any money on those. Let's cut those out. Ooh, yeah, let's cock block them from the MLB. Like, ooh, no, Panini, you don't have any money. You're not getting the MLB. Ooh, Upper Deck, you suck. Get out of here. Boom. Let's just nail this down, do exactly what this company does well, and just milk it. And we've been saying this for months now. And that, oh, guess what? It's pretty much the damn truth. If you were in that room, you would have got the sense that, oh, wow, yeah, these guys, these employees, hands are tied. They literally can't do anything. There's a budget. There's a quota. There's what they can spend. And literally, no matter how much complaining from customers, podcasters, Twitterers, dealers, whatever, nothing's going to change that, because guess what? The guys who own the company, they're playing Pebble Beach today. Do you think they care about, no offense, but do you think they care about, if you were on the Pebble Beach, do you think you would care about some guy you don't know's redemption card at a company you were making money on and at $100 million, maybe potentially $100 million plus cash sitting in the bank? Not that it's a desirable business, but it's not, you're not losing money. You're not losing money. Tops doesn't lose money. Maybe they, you know, occasionally here, a year here, a quarter here, a half there. Yeah, they'll lose a money break even. They've run that thing really lean. They've weeded out all the crap. They apparently have a pretty good international business in some of their properties over there. They are obviously involved in more stuff than just sports. They have entertainment products that can be somewhat popular. And the Topps brand, when you ask somebody who doesn't know anything about baseball cards, they might know Topps. They say, oh, yeah, Topps. Or, oh, I remember opening a pack of Topps back in the day. The other companies, especially somebody like Panini, who's brand new, nobody knows who they are. They don't have any brand equity, goodwill value. That company is the thing with Dearborn is they actually do realize that, and that's maybe why it's been a hard to get rid of, because A, it has this massive cash balance that does look attractive to some company, but they have this horrible underlying business or business that has no growth. It's just sort of like a little, it's like dial-up internet. Actually, literally, it's kind of like dial-up internet. It's like, yeah, okay, some people in the Midwest still actually use dial-up internet, believe it or not. But God, you know, in 20 years, who's going to be using dial-up internet anymore? Like, nobody. Well, in 20 years, who's going to be collecting baseball cards if it's weeded out, died out since the 90s? Ooh, boy. Not that many. It wasn't like a whole bunch of people were collecting these things back in the 50s, 60s, 70s. I mean, you know what I'm saying? They had to dump a whole bunch of the 1952 cards in the Hudson River or whatever, that story, or Atlantic Ocean or wherever it was. And that's they admit to that they literally didn't, they couldn't sell it, so they just had to go dump it and get rid of it. It was to sell their bubble gum. They were a bubble gum company. They were a confectionery company. The cards were just there to market the gum. Research Cyberger. I mean, God, if Cyberger was still running the company, they'd probably actually be a better company.
They'd be selling more sugar than gum.
Yeah, it's burning through some of that cash that they have.
That too. But, they wouldn't have any left. But well, the but cash, that to me, the cash, any cash that's it's gone into Dearborn Partners shareholders' pockets. I mean, cash on the balance sheet is negligible. That's more or less in those guys' pockets. But let's move on. I don't know if we gone on 20 minutes about Tops, so we don't need to make this like an hour, 2 hour long show. But let's move on to Panini. You have any thoughts on them? And again, you know, people in this business that wonder why we're talking about this, wondering why you should think about this or worry about these kind, or not necessarily worry about these things, but just be aware of them, is you're last in line. Dearborn Partners certainly is making money. The MLB and the NFL is making money. Panini's trying to make money, and these card companies certainly try to make money. The wholesalers and distributors they sell it to certainly make money and try to make money. And now we're getting all the – and eBay, and you could add eBay and PayPal right there. You know eBay, you can just go see every 3 months how much money eBay and PayPal makes. You'd be blown away. It's a hell of a lot of money. And then we get all the way down. There's probably a lot of other costs in there that get sucked out in terms of transportation and other people making money, UPS and all those people that make money. We get all the way down to you, the seller. So if all those guys got to make money or are trying to make money before you do, that doesn't leave very much on the pie for you. And typically, if you are getting a big chunk of the pie, it's going to get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller as time goes on. So that's why you need to care about this kind of stuff.
Yes. And that's the thing. It's like buying something. It's like buying a luxury item. But unfortunately, some of the mentality in this hobby is that when I buy a box, I got to get X amount of value back. I got to get more than I paid for it. Or half the time I've got to get more than I paid for it, it's going to be a crappy box. Or I didn't get anything good, it's a crappy box. But that's the thing. You're so low down the food chain that all these other people, we didn't even get into the guys who make the cards. Oh, what about the athletes themselves?
Right.
Oh, they have to make money in the Players Association. I think we got into how the, a little bit how the license, I'm not going to pretend like I know exactly how the licensing works, but I know how much they're getting paid. Trust me, way down the food chain. I mean, you went down the food chain. You're at the bottom. So that's why these products suck. Because there is nowhere at the end to make them good, to give you value, to blow you away, to make you want to rush out and go buy this stuff. Let's talk about Panini. On the surface, you know, it's kind of like, oh, they have this baller kind of lifestyle and the VIP parties and all this kind of stuff. Their main customer right now is Group Breakers. So you should have seen how many, like, oh, you know, parading up these Group Breakers opening product on camera, because guess what? That's really the only people that want their stuff. And, oh, there's rumors somewhat intelligent blog post from an overseas obscure blog or whatever. You can search some forums and dig around for information maybe on that. They might want to get rid of the American business or the whole business, which overseas is big. Over here doing cards is meh. I had people telling me that had interviewed with Panini and a lot of the card companies, actually, that base, frankly, it's a little weird over there at Panini. A little awkward, a little frat boyish, a little kind of too high on our britches when your product sucked. NBA cards, eh. Hockey cards, eh. Your baseballs, I mean, nothing compared to Topps. I mean, look at what happened to Upper Deck. Upper Deck was the biggest card company. And it just, well, we'll get into Upper Deck. It's worse than Panini right now. They did this VIP party, and guess who got to go? Not any kind of, I guarantee you the amount of people there, it was like 5% of them were actual collectors. So yeah, sure, they probably sell some stuff here and there, and they trade some stuff, but it's not a business to them. They make a lot of money probably in doing something else, wisely, smartly. Actually, so the 5% of the people probably have that VIP party were these smart guys who just like to buy cards. God bless them. The other percentage was, oh, all the distributors got a ticket to that. That's why I was like, why am I seeing distributors around here? What, they don't have booths here. Like, they can't sell anything. Like, oh, because they get to go to that VIP party. Oh, and all these Group Breakers who buying all this product and working 60, 70 hours a week breaking all this crap. They got VIP tickets. Oh, who, you know, all the big dealers. You know, you can guarantee the big box sellers and some of those people were there. Just chumming it up, having a good time. That's who got to go to that thing. But that company's in worse financial shape than Topps. Like, if we're going food chain, let's just talk food chain here. So we'll just go the big three, Topps, Panini, Upper Deck. So it goes Topps. They're the way top of the food chain. And then in the break-even to we're losing bleeding money category, there's Panini. Let's move on to Upper Deck. Let me tell you about Upper Deck. Former employees there, and there's actually a very, on one of the social media networks out there, billion-dollar social media network, there's a really good group of former Upper Deck employees. And, oh, guess what? Not only have I talked, I've done some research, guys. Oh, novel idea there. I did some research, talked to some of them. Guess what? Toward the end of their run, they were worried. Think about this. I'm going to let this sink in when I tell this to you. They were worried they weren't going to get a check toward the end, that their paychecks would bounce. They wouldn't show up. How effing sickening is that? That a company that gets glorified isn't going to pay their employees that work? And that some of them care? That's sickening. Sickening when I think about that. It's not a good business. That's not a business we should glorify, prop up, clown on people who make fun of it. They weren't going to pay their employees. Their employees were scared. Tell me a job you worked at where you were unsure if your paycheck was going to come or get bound. How would you feel about that company? Makes me sick to think about it. If there's somebody in this business where the employees who all had to get laid off, or leave. They literally got laid off. go to the California government website. It's all there. Got laid off. And toward the end, they weren't sure if they were going to get a check. That makes me sick. Absolutely sick. Nothing that fires me up more than that. More so than customers getting screwed, to be honest. If you're working somewhere and you might not get a check from that company, it makes me sick. That's where the card companies are at. And everybody aside from Topps could end up exactly like Upper Deck, where their employees are worried they're not going to get a check. It happened at Panini. They keep blowing, that VIP party probably cost $75,000. At least. Puig and Clemens and whoever else, Pedro Martinez, whoever else, models, rappers. Now you wonder maybe why I get so fired up sometimes. Employees are worried they're not going to get a check. That makes me sick. To my stomach. That'll keep me up at night thinking about that. Thinking about these guys who I've met. They're nice guys. They actually care. God, they would make the best set if they could, if they had the budget and they could just blow money. They would make the best set of cards. Get the guy to sign, get the lazy athlete to sign. Some of these employees would make the best set of cards, but their hands are tied. And now they might not get a check? Makes me effing sick. Anyways, maybe we should talk about some good businesses now that we talked about some bad businesses. Some of the people who are running good businesses, let's talk about guys who have, one, let's talk about Mr. Innovator. Check out my card. I hear, there's been some chatter about how guys who set up a webcam on a website they don't even own and have 30 people in a room and at times are running illegal online raffles, which they self-admit to. Those guys are innovative. No, the guy who quit Microsoft is innovative. Check out my cards. Talk to him. That guy's the smartest guy in the room. That guy can do whatever he wants. That guy's so smart that he's going to have so many I actually don't want to talk about it too much, but the guy's the smartest guy in the room, and he's not going to just make money selling cards. Trust me. Trust me. For one, he's done something very innovative with the secondary market. He's been able to scan, list, pack, ship your cards all for you. Organized, well organized. He's gotten a good selection of customers over there. He's, I think, marketed himself pretty well. He hasn't blown through a whole bunch of money marketing himself. God knows that. I mean, he advertises here and there. He has a presence on social media. He updates his blog sometimes, but it's really been word of mouth that, hey, this is a really pretty cool website. And I got tipped onto this many years ago, and apparently not a whole lot of people in the industry have. Apparently a lot of people in the industry, when he was kind of first coming up and he was trying to get some of these partnership deals that he's going to get now because, oh, wow, man, they took him. I don't know why it took him so long. Boy, let's just go. I don't want to harp on check on my cards too much. The guy quit. He was a big shot. Not a big shot. I mean, he's not Bill Gates, but he was a pretty big. I mean, if you talk to him, you know that he's an extremely skilled developer at Microsoft, and he quit to start a baseball card company. When I heard that, I didn't even check out his website that much, or didn't even start using his website. But when I heard that, I was like, oh my God, this guy's going to do big things. Like he's got balls, and he's smart, and he's willing to go into this business. Wow, he must know exactly what he's doing. But yeah, guess what? He hired one of the best guys in the industry, Mark Anderson. When he left Beckett Grading Services, which he pretty much built for the last 15, 16 years, and made a is making that company Beckett multi-million dollars. Mark Anderson is pretty much essentially responsible for that. Oh yeah, check out my cards, hired him away. And guess what? There were a lot of people who want to hire Mark Anderson. If you ever talk to him, he's not going to say it. He'll never hope. I actually hope he doesn't listen to this podcast because the guy's as 100% class, ethical, and when I say 100% class, I mean 100% class. like he would cringe listening to this podcast, some of the language I'm using. That's the type of person this is. Type of grown man this is. I'm willing to say that, these things, because I've done my research. This isn't, you know, like I said, I try to do research before I talk. Anyway, they're running an extremely innovative business. Watch when that thing blows up. If they had stock, I'd buy so much of it. I'm not going to get into the situation, but there was an extremely big-time dealer, who was changing and making fun of Check Out My Card when I heard a presentation maybe a few months back. Guess who had to go literally basically drop to their knees to Check Out My Card this weekend? Yep. Because guess what? Check Out My Card did something unbelievably innovative and unbelievably valuable. We're not talking about pennies selling cards. Millions, sons. Millions. That guy knows exactly what he's doing over there, and it's a great website. And guess what? He cares about collectors, and they have a whole host of employees that care and are extremely friendly and absolutely first class. First class. He hires people. And I just talked to just random people who don't know me from Adam. But we'll talk. I say, oh, yeah, here's my account. I've sold all these cards. These guys, the people we have working for him are 100% class. And I would give him my wallet, get up at the end of the day, and wouldn't even have to check to see if money was still in, because I know it would be there. 100% class. Next, let's talk about some other businesses. I have a lot of respect for this. Probstein, I hope I'm saying his name right, because that's how much respect I have for him. Probstein 123 runs a consignment business on eBay if you have a really good card that sells for over 100, he'll give you a very fair percentage. Probably at some point lose money on it. But because he has all this other stuff that he's selling and it helps sell his other stuff, he has a huge eBay account, had 9 people working there. But this is how much respect I have for this guy. I don't know much about the Jewish faith, but apparently on Saturdays, I believe it's called the Sabbath, you're not supposed to work. And you're also not supposed to make other people work. So on the big, and Mr. Probstein123 is Jewish, and on Saturday, the biggest and busiest day at the National, where he would have got a ton of things to look at to consign for his store and make money, he observed his fate and he shut down his booth and paid a fine for it. A lot of respect for somebody like that. A lot. Incredible amount of respect for somebody like that. He was running a great business on the surface. I mean, I didn't talk to him he was so busy over there. Pretty obvious. He shuts down his booth on the Saturday of the National.
It shows that actually he paid, I'm certainly for himself to get there. I'm sure he might have paid for at least a couple of his 9 employees to get there and all their equipment and stuff like that. And he pays for all that, pays for a booth, with knowing that he's going to have to close it during the busiest day and pay a fine to close it. It just shows you how, I'm not going to say profitable, but because I don't know his profit numbers, but it shows you that, okay, this guy either doesn't care about money or he's making some, because you don't go all that way, bring all that amount of people, and shut down on a Saturday, one of the 2 busiest days of the whole show, if it still wasn't valuable for your business or your company. Maybe he lives in Chicago. Maybe it was that easy. I don't know. But it just seems to me that if you were willing to do, if you were in this guy's position, you were willing to do all that and close on a Saturday, like, you must be doing pretty well. And I think that to summarize, you know, I don't know what he sells and how he makes all his money, but it sounds like he hustles. And I remember doing that back in the day where, yeah, I would sell one box or sell one product, but then I would start selling other things.
Well, yeah, the way I look at it is that he cares more about his fate and who he is as a man than he does about making money on the biggest day of the National. That's what I respect. He cares more about his faith and observing that and who he is as a human being. he's willing. You could just, if they would let you, you could just set up on Saturday and make a ton of money and leave. Like, it could be a one-day thing, but they don't want you to close your booth. Especially somebody like that who's got 9 people working there and a bunch of people coming up trying to consign some stuff and get money in the dealer's hands over there. But he's who he is as a man, as a person. He doesn't just throw that aside to go grab some money. And he runs a good business. From everything that I heard. There's one guy. There's another guy. Positive example. That's in, very positive. Next, the Hustlers. I'm not going to name these guys by name. And I love these guys. I have a tremendous amount of respect for these guys. Oh, my God. These guys are, for one, they're some of the biggest positive characters in this industry. Like, and I don't know a lot about them. Sure, there could be some stories out there. But I just have a lot of respect for these guys who literally, they're like their own personal eBay. They're just boom, 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 buying, selling things all the time. At the show, if they have a store, at show, at card shows, at on eBay, on maybe they probably don't mess with check out my cards too much because they don't mind that just grinding mentality. They're buying and reselling at the same time. Half these booths, these guys were doing more buying than it seemed like they were doing selling. They were getting some great deals because collectors needed money when they were there, and they know they're just straight hustlers in the best sense of the word. That's what I think these guys are. These guys that have the quarter boxes, but then they have the Babe Ruth cut that they got a good deal on, this, and they know their cards like the back of their hand. I saw them turn down more cards than they nice cards than they did buy them. They were like, I'd only be there for this. Oh, it's got a bad corner. Oh, the signature doesn't look so good. Oh, I'd only give you this much for it. Then they'll buy 16,000 jersey cards for 50 cents each and know that he's going to triple up on it. Nobody's going to hear about that. Just going to grind and sell all those cards. Hustling. Probably making a decent, some of these guys seem like they made a decent living and they'd be fun to hang out with too. A lot of respect for those guys, and there's several of them. I mean, I'm just in my head, I'm thinking about 4 or 5 of them that I just observed. I've talked to maybe in the past. I've seen at the industry summit. God, a lot of respect for those guys. They're kind of in the background because they're so busy and they're just grinding. Not maybe so busy, but they're just so intelligent about the business and the smarts and how they can unload cards that on the surface seems like they're doing really well. And it's funny because I see them over in San Francisco at the card show over there. I see them over here. But, I mean, if it costs me a lot of money, it's costing these guys a lot of money to be around. It seems like they're smart enough to where if they weren't making money on something, they quit or they go do something else. And these guys are smart enough to actually hustle something else. But they've built a really solid business on the surface. Not all of them. Definitely not all of them. If you think me and your host are scumbags, you should take a stroll around the National sometime. Again, I try to do my research. Observe people, talk to people, ask people about certain people. And I try to get, and at this point, I'm trying to give credit to some people that I've seen that are extremely innovative. Do care. What else would you like to talk about today, Colin?
I don't have a whole lot else, I guess. I don't have a whole lot, I guess. You got any final thoughts on the show and the kind of things that went on there?
Well, it's a dangerous game people are playing there. You can see all sides of the business. You can see and talk to people and know that some of these card companies are not as glorious as they want you to make you seem. Even somebody like Todd, the Topps employees, are at this point now in the self-admitted stage that our hands are tied by, you know, our budget and what we're able to spend. Because, again, Dearborn is running a tremendous business. They're trying to run a real lean, sell shampoo type of business. You're not just going to give the shampoo away. You're going to try to get your costs all the way down to where you can make the most profit. Type of business they're trying to run. Just the truth. It's literally the truth. Like, there's, you know, and sometimes the truth hurts for these companies. go do a little bit of research on Upper Deck, some of the former employees, many, many former employees that have very openly talked about, not on Twitter, not on where you they don't write a blog and blast it. You got to actually do some research and find what's gone on over there. And the sickening reality that some employees there were afraid their checks weren't going to cash. And it didn't get to that point because they just got laid off. They lost their job living in Southern California, which is one of the most expensive places in the world to live. These people now are on the street with families and kids and are good people and care about collectors. And made sets like Exquisite. Built that business. While Richard McWilliam, bless him, that he's passed away, but would roll around in a Bentley.
In a private jet.
He had a private jet business. It's not a joke that he had a private jet. He had a private jet business. Do some research. And he bought the most, one of the most expensive pieces of property in New York, which maybe is, the dang near most expensive place to live in the world. And that had, I can't remember what his cleaning bill. His, cleaning bill per month was, $2 million. It was, there was some insane number. You could do the really easy research and find. And it was from a reputable source. It's not from, me or something. So do some research, again. Look that up. So, if you're trying to do group breaking, if you're trying to sell boxes, if you're trying to be a dealer, you're in for a long road. Not a very good business. And there's only a few people who have unique business, and actually some of them do some innovative things or think differently. Like the guy Probstein, who does consignments where he basically could take a loss or damn near break even because he knows it's going to promote the other side of his business. Don't have to squeeze everybody dry. It's not all about giveaways. Giveaways attract the people you don't want, the people who don't have money, and usually younger demographic who aren't going to spend with you. You need to incentivize things for some of these guys who actually do have money. Some of these old guys don't even know what the internet is. I mean, half the show doesn't even have a flip phone yet, let alone a smartphone.
I bet they were listening to this podcast, though.
I had a lot of people, because I had a Samsung tablet, which is whatever. I had a lot of people just kind of come up to me like that was a cool thing. And I was like, doesn't everybody have one of these things? iPad kind of thing? That's connected to a network. And it's it's miles away out there, some of the people at that show. It's the 90s. You could take a snapshot of 1991, cut down about one-tenth of the people, and that's what you got in Chicago, basically. Some of the same cards are still there, too. And the vintage stuff.
You can't control where you're born or even where you live to some certain extent, so I'm not... parts of the world are more educated and affluent than others, so I'm not too... not too worried about that, but any final thoughts for everybody about the show and maybe next year where it is and whatnot?
We can go on and on about some of the shady stuff, some of the auction houses, some of the authenticators. Trust me, I heard some real doozies of stories of the most reputable authenticators passing stuff, authenticating stuff that even I knew, if somebody put it in front of me, I would have known it wasn't real. Literally, there was an example of that this weekend. You can search forums. I guess the forums are really good to read during shows like this because it gets kind of active on there and some shady stuff might go down. But you could have shown me some of things authenticated and I would have been like, no, that's not real because of X, Y, and Z. So some of this stuff that gets passed and authenticated and autographed or in these big auction houses that sell for tens of thousands. Trust me, these guys, a lot of these people are just trying to grab that money. They don't care about you. They care about your money. care about your money, collectors. They don't show me somebody outside of maybe some of the good businesses I described that actually care about you. You think eBay really cares about you? No. You know, they care about your money. So they'll give you tools so that you won't get bad feedback and you can get chargebacks and all that stuff. Care about your money. They want your money. And that's the biggest company in the world. They're doing, you know, in the game, technically, I guess. If there wasn't eBay, or if eBay was like, forget sports cards. You can't list them on here anymore. You'd see some long faces real quick. Things would dry up real quick, and it's going to continue to dry up. It's a dangerous, dangerous game that people are playing to just say this is all rosy and that the roses are great. Just go around, sniff the roses, and blow up her deck when they aren't paying. They might not pay their employees. They just lay them off. Think about that. God, that makes me sick. When somebody who I cares about told me that, made me sick. Worried about the check was going to show up toward the end, and then just got laid off. That's how they're treating their employees. How do you think they're going to treat you? Maybe it's time to start acting. And the guy who was standing in the top line trying to take names for a class action lawsuit. I'm not saying go that far. I mean, I wouldn't go that far. That's going to get the... But then you're not going to get anywhere either because these guys, they're so well protected. And what is there to sue? You know, you'd have to have a great lawyer to win that case. Because trust me, these guys have themselves well protected. They know what kind of business they're running. Madison Dearborn's got a couple lawyers, too. Trust me. They're playing Pebble right now, too. They're probably coming up 17. They started, when we started this thing, they were on what? What do you think, about hole 8 or 9?
they would have been on, we only played it. They might have been like on like 12 or 13. And now, you know, an hour later, they've played about 5 holes. So, yeah. You know,
they're pretty too, guys. Guess where they're going to be? They're going to be coming up the 18-3 when the sunset is setting over the ocean at Pebble Beach Golf Course. Literally one of the most picturesque places in the world. That's where those guys are. Don't care about redemptions or Santa Claus cards or anything like that. People need to be...
Or their employees.
Way more... Yeah, or the employees.
Because they'll just replace them.
With these companies. Way more aggressive with these companies if you want things to change. But nobody wants things to change because they all, even collectors, need money out of this business. We talked about the food chain. That when I buy shampoo, I'm not looking to resell it on eBay. That's what the card business is. You're buying shampoo that you then have to turn around and sell on eBay. You're buying toilet paper that you have to turn around and try to resell. Think about how stupid a business that would be. That's what baseball cards is. They're making a product that is supposed to be toilet paper. Not really toilet paper. You use toilet paper. But it's supposed to be like an art hanging on a wall or a musical instrument that doesn't appreciate in value, that just sits there and only you enjoy it. Not meant to have resale value or go up or go down. They explicitly say that sometimes on their packs and boxes. It's a dangerous game. That there is this pseudo impression that, you can buy these boxes and hit the lottery and win big. You're not coming from the card companies. They don't want to tell you that. They'll show you all the big hits on the sell sheet, and they'll give you a preliminary checklist with just the Hall of Fame name. But then when the product comes out, it's got a bunch of scrubs, and the Hall of Famers are numbered to 25 and impossible to get. And end up in some third world country, gets boxes a week early, and they're all on eBay. They're not selling these cards so that you can make money or that they're going to be worth something. That's why this hobby has declined. That's why so many people from the 90s were mad, because there was that expectation that they were all going to be worth like those 1952 Mickey Mantles. They're not. And you could see, just like a house, if the housing market crashed, you could see all these athlete signatures crash one day too, when they screw up their career and take steroids or party or sign autographs in college. It's a dangerous game. More people need to speak up if they want to make any kind of living in this industry in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years. If they just care about tomorrow, great. The National probably went well for you. all you care about is right now, I need to pay my bills, I need to pay my check. Oh, Nashville's probably great. Bunch of old guys there with money. As long as you had something good to sell, and you had a good margin, and you bought well, and you had a whatever. Trust me, there's enough people there trying to spend money. I talked to every dealer I pretty much talked to was like, yeah, it went pretty well, or, oh, this was my best year by a little bit, or, oh, yeah, it was right there where I needed to be. You know, I did okay, I did great. Saturday was good.
None of them were flying PJ, though?
Maybe the guy at Beckett was flew PJ. Maybe Tim from Check On My Cards, too modest a guy, and he's still kind of trying to grow his business, so he didn't. And fly PJ. Again, the Prop Scene 123 guy is way too class a man that's on the surface, fly PJ. Some of these dealers might have through, some of these hustler guys who I just have a tremendous amount of respect for, hopefully I can talk to a little bit more in the future when I see them at the summit and some of these things. Maybe these, now trust me, some of these guys seem like they don't fly PJ, but they might be able to end up on a PJ. Connected to so many people. They're so well connected. They know the price of these cards like the back of their hands. They're willing to drop $10,000 at the drop of a hat on 50,000 cards because they know 100% that they're going to triple their money in 6 months. I mean, these guys are really sharp guys, and there is a market for these cards. That's why Check On My Cards has thrived so much. That's why eBay has loved the sports card category. That's why Amazon was sponsoring the badges because the secondary market is actually really cool. I bought some cards. I bought, Hank Aaron on it. I was trying to buy cards. I wasn't trying to buy boxes. The only boxes I bought were a good deal and were less than $10, and I sent all the cards in to Check On My Cards so that I could sell them and probably buy a Buster Posey autograph or, you know, whoever I want, a bunch of Mike Bolo candy autographs. There's still people like me, you know, and lots of people, everybody pretty much at the show who was buying, who still love just having that card of your favorite player, that autograph, because how am I going to track down Barry Bonds? I'm going to track. I'm not going to ever see Hank Aaron and put a card in front of him. I mean, that's never going to happen. And those Topps cards are so expensive, but you know I can get what is quote unquote an authentic autograph by a quote unquote reputable company. I mean, at some point you just got to put your trust in the thing and buy these things. But so there's some good. There's some very good in this industry, and I hope that some of the negative stuff doesn't overshadow. If you go to my YouTube page isn't me ranting, F-wording, raving on 10 to 15 videos of me just trying to show the National off. And you wouldn't believe how many people are like, wow, I can't wait to go. Where is it? Wow, I want to be there. Just comment after comment is a positive comment about, wow, I'd love to be there. That's why I put the videos on YouTube, because I'm loving being there and I want to show that to people. Not all negative, guys. Do some research. Don't just read the Twitter stream. Go to our website where we have, 1,500 articles? Where do I rant and rave on there? Like on three of them? And on the podcast? Do some research. Me and you are not just clowning the hobby and making fun of people and bragging about maybe our lifestyle a little bit. Do some research. We actually do promote the hobby in our own special way. And I hope I touched on some of the people today that I met at the show and that I talked to and that I observed and talked to other people about who appear to be first class. Somebody like Mark Anderson, who, again, I'm hoping is not listening to this because the guy's first class. I wouldn't even drop the dang in front of him, D-A-N-G, let alone say an F word or anything else around him. That's how much respect I have for him, how he carries himself and how he lives his life. And now he's with the other smart guy in the room, Tim from Check On My Cards. Watch when that company blows up. Watch when we do this podcast again in 3 or 4 years. That guy's crushing it. Trust me. So hopefully some of that comes through, some positivity comes through in the midst of employees maybe not getting paid and getting laid off. Some of these card companies that were going broke. Maybe we should glorify some of these people who really keep low key. They're not going to brag about themselves. Me and you are cocky little, you know what? We like to brag a little bit sometimes. And that's it. That's what it is. That's not going to change, probably. Some of these guys are real humble and real first class. And I'm smart enough and done my research to figure that out. anything else you'd like to discuss?
Not really. Not really. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not too wound up. I mean, it's a card show. I know people were there making some money. Some weren't. Some are. Some aren't. But it's just like any other business. You know, we got to just wait it out. Couple, you know, this is going to, I honestly think this is going to be kind of a rough season for cards. You have basketball, which is off the double rookie class with Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving and Damian Lillard and all these other guys in there, and Klay Thompson and Harrison Barnes. I mean, those guys were in every set, and that stuff was being promoted at the National for the Rapper Redemption, so it meant it didn't sell. Well, wait till next year when you only got one rookie class that everybody on the NBA and around the league seemed to thought really sucked. Oh, and the NFL. Oh, the last couple years has been amazing with quarterbacks and running backs and wide receivers and Pro Bowlers and Hall of Famers and whatever. Oh, well, this year, the whole first round was like defensive players, except for the guy the Bengals took or something like that, you know? And I think Minnesota drafted an offensive player. There were barely any offensive players. Tavon Austin got picked. But, I mean, are those guys going to prop up the hobby, you know? I don't know. I've heard great things about the tight end on the Bengals, but the Bengals have A.J. Green to throw to. They have another Pro Bowl tight end to throw to. It's not like they have Aaron Rodgers back there either. So I just don't think that this season, and people that have just gotten into this business or whatever just in the last couple years or whatever and have never experienced this, oh, God, I remember working at a card store when I was like probably 17 or 18 years old and remembering the rough times, like, oh, this rookie class sucks, or nobody in baseball is good right now, or nobody in football is good, or basketball, you know, Mike Miller's the rookie of the year. Yeah, that's a great year to collect cards. You know, bad years happen, and you learn to work through it, but there's only going to be certain people. I think at the end of this year, we're going to find out who was actually making a little bit of money, or who had, more importantly, who had some money saved up. Because I think the profits and everything is just going to shrink this year. The stuff is going to get harder and harder to move. Basketball is going to be almost impossible to move. Football is going to be damn near impossible to move for the kind of margins that you kind of need to have a comfortable life. Yeah, you can make money and pay your bills and stuff like that and have barely enough money, but that's it. You're not saving any money for the future just in case all sales go, just in case we have another 9/11, or just in case we have earthquakes or something that takes down big economies in the United States. You got to think about that. People don't think about that stuff, but if you're an entrepreneur and you're a business owner and you don't think, oh, what if the internet got wiped out for 3 days or 5 days or a week, which could easily happen? Or what if there was some major, you can't control that kind of stuff, but sure, wouldn't you sure like to have some money in the bank? Wouldn't you sure like to have some cash? You certainly wouldn't want National Treasures boxes or cards or anything sitting around that wasn't straight cash money. So you probably wouldn't even want stocks or gold. You'd want straight cash money. So, you know, do what you want with your money, or work in a business that doesn't let you save up any cash money, and watch what happens when your sales run out, or your website goes down, or people decide not to buy into group breaks, or PayPal is like, eh, you know what? These group breaks are kind of shady. We see a much higher reversal rate on these groups of transactions through these groups of people. We're going to just shut them all down. That could certainly happen to everybody.
It's a shady game. Especially when some of these companies might go broke, though, or for sale, or can't.
Well, they're not making any money. They're not making any money, so I know nobody else in this industry is flying private. So unless you're doing something outside of cards, if all you do is cards, especially sports cards, maybe if you're into Magic, maybe if you're into Pokemon or HeroClix
or
whatever,
business.
Or the service, your eBay, your PayPal, your payment processor.
eBay, yes, those Probstein123, you're servicing these guys. You're
well, hold on. People argue.
Value
hold on, hold on. Crap. People argue that a box breaker is providing a service. Well, the problem is he's got to be there the whole time. eBay's on 24 hours a day. Check out my cards. I can buy a card on there 24 hours a day. Are they going to ship it out? No, but I know that when I'm buying it. They're not going to ship it out to the next day, but I can buy some. Can I buy into your break when you're sleeping? Can I buy into your break? Are you going to be busting boxes when you're eating dinner with your wife?
You've got to wait for it to fill.
Right, that too. It's not a great service. Yeah, it's a service just like PayPal and just like eBay and just like a sports card company, but doesn't make it a great business. Doesn't make it something you want to base your family's wealth on or feed your family or use your wife's money on. It's a hobby. And maybe that's where we'll end things today, is that this is a hobby. It's great, but if you're in this for the money and in this for the business, you better start becoming a lot more educated on who's making money in this business and who's not. That's probably more importantly, is who's not making money, and you want to avoid those business models and avoid the things that they do. So hopefully we gave you a little bit of insight on today's program. We'll come back whenever. You know me, I don't have a schedule around here, so I'll do these podcasts when I feel like it, and I'm sure you listen to them when you feel like it, so we're both on the same page there. Ryan, got anything else for us?
That's it. Have fun out there, and, you know, collect what you want. If you want happy times, go to our YouTube channel.
Facebook. Twitter's for change. I look, if everybody on Twitter was happy and lucky, that company would be worth 10 times less than it is today. The reason why that website is worth money is because they changed governments. They had a lot to do with changing Arab governments that people that I know from that part of the world never thought would have happened. And a lot of it had to do with Facebook and Twitter. So people think that website is just filled with a bunch of happy people giving away cards and holding each other's dick. Trust me. The guys that own that site love guys that get out there and speak out and say things on there that aren't said anywhere else. That's what makes that site popular. And that's why, maybe that's why me and Ryan use that website for what it's really used for. If you guys want to sit out and spit out 20,000 tweets in 3 years, go ahead. How effective has that been for you? Do people listen to you every tweet? Oh, no, they don't. Oh, shocking. Shocking that I tweet once a day, maybe. My brother tweets once a day. But when we decide to go off, people listen. Shocking. Shocking. Maybe you shouldn't blast Twitter with all your fucking crap all day. Maybe people would listen to you. That's what I'll close today's show on. So thanks for tuning in. We are out of here.
Yeah.